You know what you're listening to? You're listening to 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook, the home of the hits and the misses. Thank you.
A bouncing baby living down on our street. He bounces in his buggy with a boogie beat. His mama plays piano, papa.
And it's just about 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, as you just heard. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. Program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, the first day of November. And guess what I learned today? I learned today is not Election Day. Yeah, I had to force open the door at the local school where I vote, wander around the corridors a bit, and have a rather prolonged discussion with authorities about why I was in there. I thought it was Election Day. I thought the first Tuesday of every November was Election Day. But apparently not when it's the first. I didn't know that. I mean, how do you write that rule? Election Day shall be held on the first Tuesday of November, unless it's November 1st. And Emmanuel's made a fool of. I just thought it was, you know, sparse turnout. I'm used to that. I'm used to people not caring. I'm used to people just ignoring things. Letting someone else make the decision. Going home, watching TV, and seeing what happens. That's what I'm used to. So, maybe next Tuesday, unless there's some rule that it can't be the 8th either, we'll find out just what it is people decide on. Not that there's very much to decide on this year as far as major races, but there are a lot of little initiatives and local races and things like that, and oftentimes that's where the real power lies. So don't you dare sit home and not vote. Unless not voting is a vote of sorts. Now, I always got into discussions with people about that, especially at a radio station, where we have, it's no longer required. It was required that we grant all sorts of opposing views. If we have somebody who's running for office on, then we invite the other person who's running for office on. You don't have to do that anymore. We still do, but you don't have to do that. Which I think is absurd. Of course you should grant equal time. But I always raise the question, what if someone is voting by not voting? You know, staying home. What if that's the statement? Shouldn't that get equal time as well? It's a valid choice. It's a valid decision. So every time you have somebody on urging you to vote for them, shouldn't you have somebody on urging you to stay home? That doesn't really matter. It's all a waste of time. No, I don't agree with it, but I do maintain it is a view. And it's one that seems to be held by the majority of the people in this country. And no doubt that will be proven again next Tuesday. But we have another week to watch and wait and see what happens. It's more fun seeing what's happening out there right now. And of course I'm referring to the unraveling. That's right, the unraveling has begun. Actually, the unraveling began a long time ago, but it's finally becoming noticeable. Now, last week we correctly said that something would happen in the next 7 days. It did. Indictments handed down, or indictments for one person at least. And hopefully more, because so many people have to know about what happened in the outing of Valerie Plame, in the whole start of this ridiculous invasion, in the lies that took place, that were perpetrated, the deception that the American people had to be exposed to. See, the thing is, this is par for the course of any presidency. Lying is not something that's that unusual. It's what they do. They deceive the public all the time. But there's a big difference here. There's a big difference here. Clinton lied about who he had sex with. And Nixon lied with regards to the whole Watergate scandal. But the thing is, with those two major scandals, and you know, I don't really consider the Clinton thing to be a major scandal, but it certainly turned into one. Nobody died. And here we have not only over 2,000 American deaths, but even more quote-unquote coalition deaths, and a huge number of Iraqi deaths. And all of that a result of these lies, because the invasion would never have taken place if the truth had been known. If we knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. If we knew that Saddam Hussein posed no significant risk to the United States or really any other country other than his own. Which, sorry to say, it's not our business to go in and make things better for people if their own regimes suck. That's just the way it is. That's how every nation recognizes international law. Otherwise, you could say that Saddam Hussein was simply trying to make things better for the Kuwaitis in 1990. Who's to say? So none of it would have happened. A lot more people would be alive today. A lot less money would have been wasted. And who knows? Who knows what might have been? So yeah, it's a bigger scandal, a much bigger scandal, and I sure hope more than one head rolls as a result of this. Because one person was not responsible for the lying. And you'll notice too, I'm a bit disappointed by this, the only things that Scooter is being charged with are things related to lying to the grand jury. So we can only hope this is the tip of the iceberg. That, yeah, obviously, lying is bad when you're lying under oath. And he should be charged with that, certainly. But now, let's focus on the lie itself. Let's focus on what it was he was covering up, what it was everybody was covering up. And let's hope some charges are filed in the not-too-distant future so that people can really feel the brunt of the anger. Yeah, over 2,000 people, 2,000 U.S. servicemen. In fact, we even went past 2005. I was going to say, you know, we should do something special for the 2005th person to die in the year 2005, you know, because that's not going to happen again. We already passed 2006. I think we're up to 2020 now. So that's the last chance we had for someone to have that special number. And you might have noticed this, too. The media suddenly, because I believe this was buried someplace in a Pentagon report, the media suddenly took an interest in the number of civilians killed in Iraq. But, big caveat here, it was only the number of civilians killed by quote-unquote insurgents. Yeah, so the blood's not on our hands, even though it really is. It's on the hands of those evil terrorists blowing people up. And, you know, I'm not defending them at all. They are evil terrorists blowing people up. There's no question about that. But how did they come to be in the first place? You know, there's certain kinds of evil that can be created by other kinds of evil. But regardless, what about all the other people who died as a result of the bombings from U.S. planes, you know, the street-to-street fighting? How many insurgents have died? I'd like to know that, too. We'll never know. We still don't know how many people died in the Gulf War, the first one. It's unreal. It really is unreal. And it gets more and more interesting with every passing week. It's kind of good to see the truth coming out slowly. It's too slow. But hopefully it'll come out sometime soon. All right, there's all kinds of other things going on, too. And we're going to have a special guest in a few minutes as well, talking about some other things that are happening in other parts of the country. But I just wanted to focus on this for a second, because this is kind of interesting. And following the Syria story, Syria has been kind of implicated in the assassination of a former Lebanese prime minister some months ago. And the United Nations Security Council unanimously passed a resolution demanding that Damascus cooperate more fully with a probe into the assassination of that former prime minister. Now, Syria's foreign minister angrily rejected that resolution. And this, according to the Associated Press, diplomats expressed shock yesterday at Farouk al-Sharaa's response to the resolution that threatened possible further measures if Syria doesn't start cooperating fully with the probe in the February 14th bombing that killed Rafiq Hariri and 20 others. The diplomats said al-Sharaa's statement underscored Syria's isolation and highlighted the necessity for the warning to Damascus. The resolution, co-sponsored by, of course, the United States, Britain, and France, requires Syria to detain anyone whom UN investigators consider a suspect in the assassination. This is where it gets interesting. The investigators, led by a German prosecutor, concluded that the slaying was unlikely to have occurred without senior Syrian approval. Now, I don't think Syria's hands are clean in this by any stretch, but that seems like an awfully wimpy statement, doesn't it? It's unlikely to have occurred without their approval. Well, where's the evidence? I mean, yeah, okay, fine. It's unlikely to have occurred without all sorts of things, but you know, let's see something concrete here. It's kind of like an accusation without basis, unless you have that. This was the culmination of council pressure on Syria to loosen its grip on Lebanon further in the months since the assassination prompted Damascus to withdraw its troops in April after 29 years of occupation. They're talking about questioning Syrian President Assad's brother-in-law, as well as his brother, also under suspicion. France's Foreign Minister, Philippe Duplessis, said, "I would like to say that the message of the Security Council is particularly clear. Syria must cooperate with the Security Council, otherwise there will be consequences. Justice shall prevail." Okay, you know, it all makes sense to me. But it also makes sense to me why that might kind of enrage a country that feels it's being backed into a corner. The Syrian foreign minister claimed that accusing Syrian security forces of having advanced knowledge of the killing was tantamount to charging that U.S. officials knew ahead of time about the September 11th attacks, or that Spanish authorities knew in advance about the 2004 Madrid train bombings, or the British government about last summer's London subway bombings. Of course, that comment drew all kinds of outrage from the Security Council members. But I don't know. It just seems kind of strange, you know. First of all, it seems strange that they would have anything to do with this killing in the first place, because it just makes them look so bad from the start. You know? I mean, how stupid could they possibly be to do something like that? Got them kicked out of Lebanon after 29 years. Ruined everything for everybody. What could possibly be in it to do something like that? But if the evidence is there, fine. It just sounds like the evidence isn't quite there yet, and that the accusations are being made, and now the reaction is becoming apparent, which will lead to further isolation, which is exactly what the United States and the other Western countries want. Meanwhile, you have something like this. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, he's one of ours, says the U.S. government was right to keep United Nations human rights investigators from meeting with detainees at Guantanamo Bay. Now, do you think you'll see the same kind of demands from the Security Council there? I don't think so. I don't think you'll see anything. Last week, the Pentagon invited three UN experts to visit the detention facilities in Cuba. The experts turned down the invitation. One said it made no sense to go to Guantanamo without talking to the detainees. Rumsfeld also told reporters today at the Pentagon that a hunger strike by some of the detainees is meant to capture press attention. Well, gosh, what do you think it was, to lose weight? Yeah, of course, it's to capture world attention, and the press is an important part of the world. Seven of the protesters are being force-fed in a hospital. Many of the nearly 500 prisoners at Guantanamo Bay have been held more than 3.5 years without charge or access to lawyers. Now, how we can stand up and demand anything of any country while that's going on here is beyond me. And why the rest of the world doesn't react and make the same demands of us that they make of other countries? No, it may not be as highly visible as assassinating a former prime minister, but torture of human beings is still torture. And, oh yeah, of course, they're guilty, dirty terrorists. That's why they're there in the first place. They wouldn't be there if they weren't, right? Well, gee whiz, how come they're not being charged with any crimes? How come when they're released, they're just sent away and allowed to live in their whatever country they were kidnapped from, without apparently being a threat to anybody? You know, it's, the whole thing is just very embarrassing. So, that's some of what's happening in the world, some of the hypocrisy that we're seeing. But it's been an interesting week. It's been something that I've been looking forward to for a while, as far as having the chips fall. And may many more of them fall. Okay, it's time for us to make our phone call here. I'm just looking for the phone number. And we're going to get ourselves a dial tone here. Oh, yeah, the stupid pulsing dial tone again. Let's get a regular one. All right, now we're going to dial a phone number in a as yet undisclosed part of the country. And hopefully we'll hear a ring. Oh, I hear a ring.
Hello?
Hello, is this A-Team?
Yes, hey, Emmanuel.
It's Emmanuel, you're on off the wall right now, and we're speaking to you. You're down where exactly?
Boca Raton, Florida.
Boca Raton, Florida. Now, when I talked to you a couple of days ago, you still had no power because of one of the hurricanes that went through there.
Yeah, Wilma.
Wilma.
Kane Wilma.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting because it's the first hurricane beginning with a W that I can remember. But that went through there a while ago. It was about a week or so, right?
I think it was, the 23rd or the 24th, maybe. I'm not sure exactly. I think it was the 24th of October.
And you had no power for how many days exactly?
About 5 days, maybe 6 days.
Oh, that's all. I thought it was longer than that.
Oh, no. Well, that's a long time.
They were saying that there was going to be no power for...
They didn't know if we'd have power until Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
But apparently, they just say that to, cut off the complaint calls and all.
Now, okay, so tell us what it was like to be down in such a heavily populated area where there was no power at all.
It was really interesting because typically in this area, you know, it's just house after house after house. Everyone's inside all the time. With their electronic distractions, you know, the TV, the computer, whatever. But, you know, since there was no electricity, everyone was outside, and there were bonfires, and people with propane grills were cooking for the whole neighborhood, and, you know, it was really great, like, to see people. Like, it's almost like what things should be like.
Yeah, kind of a return to the native way of living.
Touch with our humanity.
So, okay, well, first of all, the storm, how powerful a storm was this?
There's, like, I heard conflicting information, something about either being a 3 or a Category 2, but regardless, the winds are up to 130 miles an hour, so I'm not sure what category that is, and right through my city, the eye went.
Uh-huh.
Not the worst of it.
So, you saw this thing up close.
Well, I was asleep the whole time, but yeah.
You
we
slept
thought
through
up
a hurricane? How can you sleep through a hurricane?
I was walking home, actually, at 4 o'clock in the morning, apparently, like, half an hour before the storm actually hit. I just passed out, and before I know it, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I go outside, and everything's in wreckage.
Wow. Well, you really have a nice way of looking at life, I guess. You just casually walk down the street while a hurricane's at your back. So there's wreckage all over the town. How big a city is it that you're in or near?
Well, Boca Raton's a pretty big city, you know. I don't really know exactly, but it's fairly sized, and, you know, it's everything from, like, suburban neighborhoods to, like, a downtown sort of area with, like, you know, city streets. It's not too big a city, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff to be broken if a powerful hurricane comes through.
And I guess
so,
a lot of stuff.
The wreckage was, like, a lot to see. It was pretty amazing.
Okay, so now, with no power, okay, you're down there in Florida in a major city, a lot of people... A lot of people used to consuming. A lot of people who use power all the time. What did you notice right away? Was there panic?
That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see that, like, chaotic. You know, everything that we're used to is just come crumbling down. I like seeing that. Hurricanes bring that to this part of the country every year.
That's here for chaos.
And actually, people sort of kept their heads and they kind of just got to work together. Like, people with generators are running electricity all through the neighborhood trying to get, you know, everyone with power, just trying to, you know, for our refrigerators and all, so we weren't living completely, you know, archaic.
And they were just charging the rate that the electric company would charge, or?
I don't even know how they worked out charging people. I mean, my dad bought a generator. We ran it to, like, the neighbors for a bit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we had our refrigerator going and my TV for about an hour a day.
You got to collect from them quickly because they'll forget otherwise. You know, if you wait a week, they're going to say, oh, I thought it was for free. You got to go over there and get the money from them now. That's how it works.
Oh, well, I don't know. That's not up to me.
Yeah, well, you know, it could be. So people are basically, I guess, in fairly good spirits?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because I met tons of new people all over, like, my area that just had come together to, my dad set up a tent out front, and we had, my sister had all of her friends sleeping there, like 30 or something kids staying in my house because we had the generator, you know? It just was, like, really interesting. It was almost like a tribal sort of thing, like, just people working together for, like, a common good and, like, trying to get food in everyone's stomachs that night and worrying about, you know, entertainment. It was really interesting.
Sounds...
And most people just, yeah, I didn't see anyone really lose their head over it.
Uh-huh. It sounds almost like socialism to me.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful.
I was about to say, the only people who really lost their head were the National Guard, who, during the distribution of ice and, like, clean water, apparently the National Guard thought it was necessary to be there to make sure the rationing went through okay with M-16s.
So wait a minute, hold on a second. You're down there in Boca Raton. There is no trouble. People are singing Kumbaya and sitting around the campfire and giving food to each other. And what, the National Guard just shows up with guns?
Well, not exactly. I mean, there's designated places like some colleges and some other like arenas where they were handing out ice and, you know, clean water to people because our water supply was also affected too. But the National Guard was there to make sure everything went okay.
And I assume everything went okay.
Hope so. Someone might have gotten a shot otherwise.
Wow.
It was pretty ridiculous. We really don't need National Guard here with guns like that. It's just threatening. It's unnecessary, you know?
Well, where were they pointing the guns? Were they pointing them at people or up in the air or what?
It was just, you know, but not at people, down at the ground. It's like a tip. It's like standard way you have to hold a gun.
Well, in New Orleans, they were pointing them at people as they were driving by. That was kind of...
That's a bit different.
Yeah.
Looting and all that.
Uh-huh. So there are no signs of looting or any kind of lawlessness?
No, I heard like a few rumors that like some places had been broken into, but I really couldn't say.
Uh huh. Did you feel you had to sit on your front porch with a shotgun because people might come and take everything you own otherwise?
No, definitely not.
What's it like at night when there's no power?
Night was great. I was telling you the stars are amazing because there's no ambient light pollution, you know, because all the electricity for miles and miles was gone, so we had nothing but the light of like a kerosene lamp or a candle. So, you know, the stars were amazing. You could see all the constellations. And for people who are really interested in, like, you know, outer space and anything having to do with the stars, it really was like a sight to see. I've hardly ever seen anything like it before.
Did you see Mars? Mars has been closer this week than in a long time. Actually, since 2003, but it won't be this close again until, I think, 2018.
Yeah, I was reading about that.
So, okay, so all these stars suddenly appear. Everyone's able to see the stars. I guess you can actually hear, like, a long distance away because there isn't a lot of noise either.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really hear anything unusual. It was mostly quiet, you know. There's no, what could be making noise? Someone shouting, I guess, but no electricity. It was, like, so silence, and my bedroom was absolutely quiet for the first time, and I can't even remember because I've got all the computers running all the time, so...
Uh-huh.
Completely dead silent.
So did you revert to some kind of a daytime schedule?
What do you mean?
As far as, did you wake up with the sun? And?
Oh, yeah, that changed a lot, because typically I'm up to like, 5 o'clock in the morning, just pounding away on the keyboard, doing whatever it is I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
But what are you going to do? When it's dark out, you just naturally fall asleep. I would find myself getting tired around 10 o'clock, regardless of what time I woke up. It was really strange. It's almost like Mother Nature was designed to make us live a certain way, and we've just been ignoring it for so long.
Uh-huh. So now the lights come back on. Did you feel relief or did you feel disappointment?
Well, it's a bit of both, you know? Like, it's relief because there's a few conveniences that I think we could all do with, including air conditioning, warm water, things like that. But it's kind of weird. I'm still not really back into the groove of just sitting at home and just doing whatever it is I used to do. I'm still wanting to, like, just spend more time with people rather than with things, which is good.
Yeah, yeah, more natural things, less artificial. Can you think of any particular stories that you experienced, adventures, anything strange that happened?
I mean, right after the storm hit, and everything was, everything was calm, a couple of friends and I went out just to, like, you know, assess the damage, and we saw some pretty insane things, like, really huge trees just completely uprooted, fall on people's houses and telephone poles and the big cement ones just snapped in half like toothpicks laying all over intersections. And it was just like chaos. Something you'd see after like some kind of nuclear holocaust, you know? It was pretty neat to see. Not too many like particular stories, just a lot of fun. Every night we would just like listen to, because I had a battery-powered CD player, we would listen to all these albums and and people who I'm friends with who've never really given music a chance before, never really listened to music, like playing Dark Side of the Moon for them and like Sgt. Pepper's, they just, well, I loved it, and it was really great to see.
Yeah, I think when we talked earlier, you said that you would feature an album a night or something like that.
Yeah, it only lasted for 2 nights, at least with like a whole group of people. But every night, I would just put on music with my like that battery powered boombox I was telling you about, and yeah, just it was great.
Now, were things available? I mean, if you ran out of batteries, would you be able to get more batteries? Or
yeah, we had waited in line. That's another thing. There was lines at the door for grocery stores. Lowe's, Home Depot, places like that. Radio Shack is where I was in line for a while, getting some D batteries for lamps and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And how far away was it before you could find a place with power again?
Oh, I think it was Orlando. It was like the nearest place that didn't lose any of its electricity. And that's, for my house, that's about 3 hours driving on the highway.
Wow.
So, yeah, you can imagine, like, if there's no light for three hours on the highway, the night sky is absolutely beautiful, and we listen to Dark Side of the Moon like a dozen times while laying out underneath the stars. It's like, if anyone has listened to that album, they know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I've never listened to it in the middle of a blackout before. I got to remember that. That sounds like the best way to do it. And you had a decent speaker system, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was, you know, just pretty heavy speakers, so they're pretty good, and just, you know, just a boombox.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you made the most of it. Any unpleasantness in this whole thing?
One thing in particular was just the tons of people that were staying at my house for whatever reason. People just tend to, like, gravitate towards my home for whether...
I think it's a generator. I think that generator is a magnet.
Partially, yeah. Part it was a generator, and part is because we always had so much food. And it just was like, it's a good place to be because we're really hospitable people. You know, we always make dinner for people. We're always inviting people over. And, yeah, it's just the kind of place where you like being, I think. I mean...
All right, so we know that hospitality.
Yeah, I kind of got a little bit stirred up about how many people were here because my home was like being taken over, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get a shower, and there's so many people
here. So. I think you have like 5 days worth of hospitality at least, and maybe after 10 days you wouldn't have been so hospitable.
Yeah, I might have lost it then.
Uh-huh. I mean, everyone has their limit.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. Did you just stay home the whole time, or did you go to other people's houses, or?
Yeah. What we would do is mostly just kind of rotate around, just getting in the car with what little gas most people had left, and just, you know, going around and seeing, well, what can we do at this house? What can we do at this house? And luckily, we all have laptops, so with combined battery power, we could watch a few movies, or we watched Futurama a lot. Great show. And
wow.
Played board games. They're just, you know, just it's kind of amazing because. You know it's going to come back. You know it's a temporary situation. That's how you're able to make the best of it because you know, oh, it's okay. In a week from now, electricity is going to be restored. But imagine if that weren't the case, if this was like the new way things, if this was the new order.
Right, right. Well, of course, you also weren't living in squalor. It wasn't a flood around you. There wasn't disease breaking out.
Oh, no. It was nowhere near New Orleans. But it's definitely the most intense hurricane I've ever witnessed here.
Wow, and that's something. Living in Florida, you would think that you get a hurricane every year or something like that. And this one, I mean, this year has been unbelievable. What's your feeling on that? I mean, the number of hurricanes that have come through?
Yeah, well, my whole life living here, I've always felt this is not a place people are meant to live, mostly because of the humidity and the swampland and the really insane insects you see. But in the last 2 or 3 years, yeah, because of this weather cycle, we're getting these really heavy hurricanes. Like last year, we had at least three or four, I'm not sure exactly, run through this area. We were out of school for an entire month.
Yeah, last year I remember I heard that Florida got hit a lot.
Yeah, it's a weather cycle thing. Some people are saying global warming. Others are saying it's this 40 to 50-year cycle, which is going to die down after next year and it's going to come back. I don't really know. I can't say.
Well, whatever it is.
Because I've never taken notice of this before, and that's because it's never been here before.
Whatever it is, though, it's proof that Mother Nature has the final word as far as anything that we do.
Oh, they will come soft rains.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned it looked like a nuclear holocaust. Yeah, it did, because the wrath of nature is something you just cannot mess with. You can't conquer that.
Certainly not. And it almost seemed like, I mean, you could speculate or theorize for hours about what, you know, just thinking about it. And it's almost like Mother Nature is slapping us in the face and saying, what are you doing? This is not how it's meant to be.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to say Mother Nature's not in a particularly good mood this the last 12 months or so. We've had a tsunami, we've had major earthquakes, we've had hurricanes. You know, what's left? Well, I'm sure a lot's left, but wow.
Yeah, I mean, who knows why this is happening? I wouldn't be so quick to, like, jump the gun and say that it's something, you know, Armageddon-like, but it's certainly interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if humans have that much power where they can actually influence the climate to that degree, but they certainly don't have as much power as they think they do in conquering it and living through things that that come their way. So now, when this thing was approaching, was there panic since people, you know, had experienced Katrina and Rita?
Well, interestingly enough, it was quite the opposite. Everyone had this strange feeling that the hurricane was just going to, like, turn away. I'm not sure why. People just couldn't, like, really possibly, you know, imagine, oh, a huge hurricane is going to come right our way and destroy everything. No one could possibly conceive of this, so.
Well, it didn't sound like you conceived of it. You were walking down the street at 4 in the morning, half an hour before the hurricane came.
Well, I mean, that's me. I boarded up all my windows. I put up shutters. I, you know, I did everything necessary, and thank God I did, because.
And then you went for a walk.
Yeah, I mean, I was walking home from a friend's house. I fell asleep there, and I realized, well, I can either spend the hurricane here or walk home. So I decided to take the risk and walk home.
Uh-huh.
And I'm fine.
Yeah. Well.
But yeah, some people didn't take the hurricane too seriously, didn't do the, you know, take the proper precautions, and they definitely paid for it.
Yeah, they sure did. Well, I guess there weren't really very many casualties in Wilma, were there?
I heard there was something around 7 so far. I don't know. That's from just the hurricane alone, not, you know, from people needing hospital care or doctors or something and not being able to get to them, from just the hurricane alone.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, you know, now we're into the Greek letters, and I think that's really cool. It's never happened before. We have
that's really interesting.
Alpha, and I want to be hit by Gamma. You know, I want Long Island to be decimated by Hurricane Gamma. That would be just so cool. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I don't want anybody
that.
To get
I like
hurt, but I just, you know, I just want that headline. You know, Gamma hits us really hard.
Hey, Gamma.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just you know, the chaos that you were mentioning before. It's interesting. It makes for, you know, a pause in the day's occupation, I guess.
Definitely. And it's amazing because you can see the people who ordinarily you wouldn't suspect would really see this hurricane in like a week or so without electricity and without typical, you know, conveniences. You'd expect some people to, you know, freak out and not be able to take, you know, not really be able to make good out of the situation. But surprisingly, so many people just came together and really just impressed me because typically, you know, people are so lost.
Uh-huh.
So lost.
Yeah, and the ones that freaked out, I guess, did so quietly, and you probably didn't hear about them.
Probably not. Maybe it's not people are so lost, but, you know, living in Boca Raton, this is where Seinfeld's parents live, if you remember.
Oh, my God.
Boca Raton is a whole world of its own for anyone who's never been here before.
Wow, and is it accurately portrayed?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's really,
really
like that.
So there's little fiefdoms of people running for elected boards of retirement communities and things like that?
It's got the gated communities, you know, the prisons.
How in the world did those people survive?
Oh, that's—I don't really know. I was wondering about that myself. How did the older people?
Maybe you ought to check to make sure they did survive.
Maybe no one has yet.
Well, that's just callous. I mean, you know, I know people in Florida. It's every man for himself. But come on.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it sounds 18. It sounds like you survived quite well. Does everybody have power back now?
Actually, weirdly enough, half of my my street has power, and then if you just the house right after mine is the last on the block with electricity, and then from then on it's no electricity. So I count myself pretty lucky.
So is there some kind of bitterness developing from the people who don't have power from the privileged few who do?
They're not talking to us. No, I don't know. I don't have internet back yet though. DSL's still out, which is a bummer.
Well, that's pretty typical, isn't it? Did you have phone service throughout?
No, we actually had no phone service except for 911. No phone service.
Wait, whoa. How could you just have 911?
Because 911 doesn't work through the, I'm pretty sure I'm right. 911 doesn't work through the normal phone system. It's like a...
Wait, you had a phone line and you had a regular landline phone, you're saying?
Correct.
But it only reached 911. It didn't go anywhere else.
Yeah. Because isn't the way 911 is contacted the phone line? Isn't it different than a...
No, it comes through the same copper wire. It's, it's programmed to go to whatever place your emergency facility is. But if you're saying...
I don't know. That's just what I heard, that we only had 911, but no other calls would go. I wasn't getting a dial tone, personally.
Well, if you weren't getting a dial tone, how could you call 911?
I don't know. I heard. That's what I heard. Apparently I'm wrong.
Okay, well, it sounds to me like your phone service was cut along with the electricity. That seems to make more sense.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, and I guess on a cell phone, maybe you could only reach 911 on that.
Yeah, thank God for Verizon being a business, you know, business-oriented cell phone service, because I had service, you know, when it hit, after it hit, and up until right now. Other people had with Singular and Sprint were like, you know, had no service and were using my phone.
Wow, and you had service throughout on your cell phone?
Yeah, I mean, it would take a bit for a call to go through, like maybe 15 seconds for it to actually start ringing, but it went through, nonetheless.
Uh-huh. But no DSL, and I guess your regular phone line is back now.
Yes, it is. And I have internet, but it's not DSL. I'll give you a hint. Wireless.
Okay. Well, thank God for that. And I guess
thank God for the neighbors, right?
Other people's wireless that you're mooching off of. Okay, well, you know, that's a standard way many people get internet access these days, is by through their neighbors.
I mean, we shared with them during the hurricane. They shared with us. I'll just consider this like, you know, continuation.
Payback. All right. Well, A-Team, it's been great talking to you. Any final observations on what it was like to experience Wilma?
Nothing except for that I really came out of it appreciating quite a few things. And people everywhere should just get back to the roots of what our purpose on this world is supposed to be.
How can we do that? What do you suggest?
Just
maybe cut the power to a neighborhood or something occasionally?
You know, obviously that's a little bit unreasonable. But for us to just spend more time with those around us, I think that's key.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because that's all you really have. A computer can't love you back. A TV doesn't talk to you. I mean, it does, but it can't listen to you.
So you were able to spend all this time with people, and it didn't drive you crazy?
No, it really didn't.
Wow. It's almost like being stranded on an island or something, right?
Yeah, except there's always that feeling, you know, oh, everything's going to be back to normal in a week. I'd really like to see what would happen if we knew it wouldn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. If you didn't have that confidence that everything was going to be okay, How well would people hold out then?
Well, you know, it'd be mass chaos,
uh-huh.
Panic at that point.
And there's nobody that you can think of that was sort of you know, being unreasonable, trying to take matters into their own hands, getting a little defensive or crazy.
There was a few things as far as like the traffic went. You know, there obviously were no traffic lights. They were physically disconnected from the power lines. They were on the ground, and some people were starting to, you know, think that they were the law as far as the speed limits went. Like, they would stand in the corner and shout at you if you're going too fast. These are just random citizens. Uh-huh. They had this, right, I don't know, it's kind of confusing. I didn't really pay much attention to those people.
Well, it's not really easy to enforce if you're just standing there and you yell at a speeding car.
Yeah.
There's
a whole matter of the National Guard thing I said. That, I mean, that's completely unreasonable and that's unwarranted, but that's the National Guard and that's mm-hmm. what they do.
Did you see any FEMA presence at all?
Excuse me?
You see any FEMA, you know, Federal Emergency Management?
I didn't see any FEMA. I mean, I saw a few guys with, you know, government navy blue jackets, but I didn't see any signs of FEMA being here. I mean, I'm sure they were somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
maybe they're just a bit too busy right now. Or maybe they don't even know what happened. That's possible.
You know, maybe nobody told them. That's
nobody told us.
Entirely possible.
Let's not even go there.
Yeah, well, you know, the phones were down. Who knows? Who knows? All right, well, listen, wish us luck with Gamma, because I know it's going to hit us hard.
All right, good luck.
All right, good talking to you. All right, take care. That was A-Team talking to us from Boca Raton in Florida, where they have the power back. And glory be. Wow. What a year. What an amazing year for hurricanes. I've never seen anything like this. None of us have. So we're into the Greek letters now, and who knows what's going to form next and how strong it's going to be. Until November 30th, that's when the hurricane season ends. Although, you know, I don't really remember very many hurricanes in November, so we might not even get any more. But let's keep our fingers crossed. No, I don't like death and destruction. Well, I do like destruction a little bit, but I don't like death and suffering and that kind of thing. But, you know, the mayhem and the chaos, I think it's good for us. I think it shakes things up. It puts things into perspective. And as we heard, you know, you get to see the stars when the power goes out. There's good in this. There's good in this. You learn things about yourself. You learn things about other people. You learn things about society, about life. It's great to just break away from your mundane routine and to realize there's a whole lot more to this world than that world that surrounds you. Okay, the world that surrounds us right now tells us that we have about 15 minutes left, so I'm going to go through some mail. That's right. We get lots of mail here at Off the Wall. And you can mail us at Off the Wall. No, that's not the right address, is it? OTW, which stands for Off the Wall, at 2600.com. And we love to hear your views on all sorts of things. I just realized I've been so busy lately. I haven't had time to do a lot of things. And one thing that I'm going to do now, I'm sorry, I have to do this because if I don't do it now, I'm not going to remember. But one of my credit cards just changed its number. And you know how you have to register the things? Yeah, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm using it and it's not registered. You know, it's embarrassing.
Thank you for calling to activate your HSBC debit MasterCard or ATM card. If you are calling from a touch-tone phone, please press 1 now. If you are calling from a rotary phone, please stay on the line.
I'll press 1.
Please enter your 16-digit debit or ATM card number now.
What if I press 2? You know? Obviously, I have a touch-tone phone if I press 2 as well. Let's see. All these little beeps. I can play these little beeps, and they're all the same, so you don't know what numbers I'm actually... Oh, unless she reads it back. If she does that, I'm hanging up on her. I'll do it, too. Okay.
Please enter the last 4 digits of your Social Security number now.
Oh. All right. Over the air, my Social Security number.
Since maintaining and protecting your credit is important to your financial security, while we activate your account,
this is what they do.
Tell you about a special offer from Privacy Guard. For
this is what they do. They make you call up once a year and then bombard you with this nonsense because you're a captive audience. If I hang up now, is my card activated? I don't know. I have no way of knowing if it's activated or not, so I have to sit here and listen to their stupid advertisement for some product I'm never going to want to buy.
Receive your credit report and credit score. Press 1 now. Otherwise, please press 2.
Okay, I have to press 2.
Miss this opportunity to check the accuracy of your credit report and credit score. While we're still activating your account, there's time to get...
They're still activating my account.
...of your confidential credit records. Yours to keep, just for...
our phone is broken,
to
too, at the same time.
Of this offer,
listen, the wire is so loose here that it's cutting in and out to the board. What? Wait, I missed that. What am I supposed to do? Repeat that, please.
Thank you for calling. Oh. We are confirming that you have chosen not to accept this credit report offer.
That's right.
Your debit card has been activated. Please remove the sticker before using your debit card.
All right, I can do
goodbye.
That. Bye. Removing this sticker. Hey. That's not our dial tone. That's their dial tone. That was weird. That was a recording of a dial tone. Well, okay. Removing the sticker. That's the sticker being removed, and my card has now been activated. But, you know, that really annoys me because every credit card I have, they do that. It's the once a year or however many times your credit card expires, opportunity for them to make you listen to a sales pitch. Because you can't, if you hang up, your card won't be activated. So you have to sit there and wait. It's really annoying and frustrating. Okay, anyway, sorry about that. I had to get that done. I feel much better now. Big weight off wherever that weight was resting. Lots of mail coming in to OTW at 2600.com. A lot of people writing in. I want to thank people who wrote in concerned about... my well-being after what happened a few weeks ago, where I wound up in the hospital with a potential mini stroke. It was really weird. Let me describe what happened. I was just sitting in an office, just actually preparing this program. This program did it to me, and all of a sudden, you know, words just didn't make any sense. You know, looking at words on a piece of paper, it was jumbled text, and then trying to speak. Wrong words are being used. Wrong words are coming out. It was slurring speech and stammering and all that kind of thing. So I got a friend to take me to the hospital, and they did all kinds of tests. Oh, my God. It's just they admitted me. They tied things to me for an entire day to monitor my progress. Anyway, long story short, I got all the test results. Everything seems fine. And they say, you know, that might have been what they call a complicated migraine or an atypical migraine. It's possible it could be that. It still could be a mini stroke. They suggest I take the children's aspirin once a day for the rest of my life, which is cool with me because it tastes really good. It's that, you know, orange flavor. Why can't they make adult aspirin taste good? I remember from childhood, children's aspirin always tasted good. Why can't every pill taste like that? But regardless, I'm on that, and everything seems okay. But thanks, everybody, for writing in. This person said the camera they shoved down your throat, that's one of the tests they did, is actually an ultrasonic transducer, hence the word echo in the procedure, I guess is the best way to phrase it, the medical procedure that's known as. They were probably searching for a patent. Oh boy, I don't even know what this is. A PFO, a patent foramen ovale, which is a hole in the heart that can cause blood clots and debris to get from the dirty side of the heart into the clean side by passing the lungs, which act like a type of filter. It's amazing all the stuff that's going on inside you. You just aren't aware of until something happens that they need to take a look at. Anyway, I had the same symptoms in 2001. They couldn't find anything. And ever since, I've experienced dizziness and vertigo from time to time. Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting because I was also experiencing some dizziness afterwards. But I think a lot of that could be psychosomatic. If you're thinking about what's going on inside your head or inside any part of you, all of a sudden you start fixating on that. Try looking at a word. Try looking at some form of printed text really, really closely. And after, I don't know, with me, after about 20 seconds, it stops looking like a word altogether. Looks like complete gibberish. Listen to a sound over and over again. And it starts sounding like something weird if you listen to it too many times. So a lot of things are in your mind, but a lot of things also aren't in your mind. You also know the difference. Okay, and we have some good feedback on last week's show, where we had Hanukkah and Sasha talking about their trip to North Korea. After hearing Sasha and Hanukkah talk about the North Korean car on the October 25th Off the Wall show, I got curious and looked on the web. Reverend Moon actually is an investor in a car company in North Korea, along with Fiat. How weird. Signed, Scott. This story from the Los Angeles Times was headlined, Against All Odds, Auto Factory to Open in North Korea. Pyonghwa Motors to turn out Fiat Siennas. I'll just read the first paragraph. At first glance, there couldn't be a more improbable business proposition than opening an automobile factory in North Korea, where hardly anybody owns a car or knows how to drive. Even more surprising is for the company making this investment to be an affiliate of the Unification Church, headed by the anti-communist Reverend Sun Myung-moon. Curiouser and curiouser. And then we had some critique as well. Dear Emmanuel, I have to tell you, the political naivete of your Dutch friends who travel to North Korea is absolutely stunning. They obviously have never heard of Potemkin villages coming across as a modern-day Sydney and Beatrice Webb, respectively. People spend a lot of time writing these letters sometimes. Respectively, although it's hard to believe that anyone with more than a room-temperature IQ wouldn't have been taken in by these obviously orchestrated events, I choose to believe that they're simply naive rather than actively mendacious, as were Walter Duranty, Paul Robeson. I'm not going to even get into that, those critiques. We don't have enough time. As far as their comments about how relaxed the North Korean border guards looked and how tense the South Koreans looked and the infantile moral equivalence they tried to draw between the North and the South and how it looked as if the border guards could reach out and touch one another, we refer to a story that isn't reproduced here. As the food they received on the inbound plane, not to mention the smiling, happy, dancing people they reported, again, referring us to articles that basically say the same thing over and over again. Yes, we know people are starving. We know there's a kind of a religious fervor in the country. We know that it's not a very nice place to live. We've heard that constantly. What you're forgetting here, you're mistaking observation for acceptance. You know, if you observe something, all we talked about last week were various observations. No, we didn't give you the same exact report that you hear every time somebody goes into North Korea, where they didn't answer my question when I asked them about all the people who are dying, about the starvation, about the totalitarian regime. Yeah, you know what? We chose not to focus on that. Because you've heard that. You can draw your own conclusions. Why not focus on something a little different? And yeah, you know, I believe the North Korean troops on the border looked more relaxed. Why? Because that's how they saw it. You know? You go to a country and you look for the things that nobody else has mentioned. And then you balance that. When you listen to what they have to say, you balance that with everything else you've heard. You reach your decisions. I don't think we presented any conclusions. But apparently by daring to actually present it from a different perspective, we have reached conclusions in the eyes of this particular listener. Don't let your problems with the U.S. government blind you to the real and obvious evil of the North Korean regime. Not the ordinary people individually, but the regime itself, which has co-opted almost the whole population to a degree which made the East German Stasi green with envy. There is no moral equivalence between the North and the South. You know, you're bringing up all kinds of issues here that we never even addressed. All right, do we have to condemn every time we even mention North Korea? We have to condemn everything bad that they've done and that they continue to do. We never get to any of the other observations, and you'd simply hear the same thing you're hearing every place else. You know, this goes on for a while, but we're out of time, unfortunately. But I do want to mention that on the North Korean news front, by the way, thanks for writing. We do appreciate your letters, and please, you know, if you feel the need to critique whatever we say, by all means, ltw@2600.com. I'd like to hear it myself. But today, in fact, it was announced that the two Koreas have agreed to compete as a single nation at the upcoming Olympics in Beijing. Now, that is going to be interesting. I suppose the South could have condemned everything the North has done again and kept the doors closed a little longer. But, you know, I think if you want to reach people, you have to go there. You have to communicate. And sometimes that means not pointing out all the problems immediately. You can deal with that in the future. But if you are constantly pointing out the failings and the problems, well, they're just not going to let you in anymore. And a wall will literally go up. So hopefully the South sees that, and that's why it's going to be a unified team. And hopefully more people will see that and start communicating. And through communication, we might actually see some change. Okay, as last week, we went out with a North Korean song. We're going to do the same thing this week. And I want to point people to a CD, which is available online. Actually, it's available to order online. I'm sure you can probably download it someplace, too. But it's worth buying. It really is. Go to the website sublimefrequencies.com. That's S-U-B-L-I-M-E, frequencies.com. And look for something called Radio Pyongyang. Commie Funk and Agitprop or Pop from the Hermit Kingdom. Yeah, it's not put out by North Korea, obviously, but it's got some very interesting songs on there, some pretty catchy ones, too. You know, if any of these songs were in a Quentin Tarantino film, they'd be a hit. That's how good they are. Okay, they're not all good, but some of them are pretty catchy, including this one that we're going to close out with. They entitled it Commie Funk, but obviously it has a different title, which we don't know. And maybe we'll just have North Korean music from now on, you know? No one else is playing it. That's it for Off the Wall this week. We'll talk to you again next week. Off the Hook is on tomorrow. Glory be. And 2600 meetings are this Friday. See you next time.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.